The word was yet.
Yeah.
The word was yet.
Yeah.
We have.
We ain't done.
We ain't done.
Yeah.
All right. I am so freaking proud of every one of you, man.
Man. Right?
I can't believe it. Well, I can't believe it.
Yeah.
Because you know what? 1 week from tomorrow, we come back together and we shock the world again. You got it? Let's get this job done. Great job, man.
We believe in everybody that's in this circle, man. You know what I'm saying? If this don't prove it, if you don't believe it yet, man, go home. Because we're taking this all the way, man. We're going to enjoy this, bro. Next week, that NFC championship is coming through us. We're going to turn it up, man. Focus back on the process. Get back in our grind. And we're going to show up next week and shock the world, man. Family on three. 1, 2, 3.
You are flying high on Locked On Eagles, your source for the best Philadelphia Eagles news and analysis. I am your host, Michael Kist. You can follow my X&O work for Inside the Pylon. Follow my draft and fantasy work for BreakingFootball.com. Follow me on Twitter at MichaelKistNFL. Benjamin Solak will be taking over here in a second. He does his draft work for NDTScouting.com. Also follow his work for Bleeding Green Nation. Follow him on Twitter at Benjamin Solak. That's S-O-L-A-K. And we crossed over with the Locked On Vikings show, which is an excellent show. One of my favorite Locked On Network podcasts. And Benjamin Solak is going to be talking with Sam Ekstrom from Locked On Vikings at Sam E-K-S-T-O-R-M. Go give him a follow. Again, love their show. They do great stuff. So we're going to kick it right over to them.
And I am here with Sam Ekstrom. He is the co-host of the Locked On Vikings podcast of the Locked On Network, as well as a Vikings beat reporter for ZoneCoverage.com. And then there were two, Sam, just you and I. Hey, thank you so much for joining me today, man. How you doing?
Doing great, Ben. It's good to be on the show. I believe it's the first time that we've had the pleasure of meeting, so it's good to meet you. It's the first time the Vikings and Eagles have met this year. So I think this is going to be an incredible week of buildup and an incredible matchup on Sunday, although I'm not sure that anything can beat what happened last Sunday at US Bank Stadium.
Yeah, that's got to be my first question, man. I just want to know how y'all feel. Like, what's got to be going through the head? What are the players talking about in the locker room now the practices have started? What is the fan base saying? You as a beat reporter, how does it feel to be near the team? Just what's the demeanor after a play like that? Are you guys thinking, you know, potential letdown? Are you guys thinking we're unstoppable? You know, fate is on our side. Like, what's the feeling of the team?
Yeah, I would say there's definitely two different mentalities between the fans and the players. I think the fans probably have that feeling of invincibility right now. People are still riding high. This was a once in a lifetime event that erased a lot of bad experiences in the minds of Vikings fans. 98, 87, 2009, the Blair Walsh miss, 4 Super Bowl losses, 41-0 in 2000. I mean, it's that top of head. Like, all of those years, all of those losses are so fresh still and still so raw in everybody's gut that to have something that spectacular is incredibly cathartic. So if you're a fan of this team, you're thinking it's a team of destiny. We've got the home Super Bowl. Nothing's going to stop us now. If you're a player, you subscribe to the 24-hour rule, sometimes not even the 24-hour rule, maybe like the 12-hour rule, and then you turn the page. Yesterday at Winter Park, it was all business. You go out there and you talk to Adam Thielen, and he's talking about, you know, doing his lift in the morning and talking about Philadelphia and talking about just kind of downplaying what had happened, which maybe as a fan is frustrating to hear. You want these guys to relish in it a little bit, but I think the team has really moved forward well, kind of taking on the mentality of Mike Zimmer. He's not going to rest for 1 second. I think he was already in his office watching film within about 10 minutes of that final play to Stephon Diggs. And that's not me guessing. That's him talking about it. So he's a businesslike coach. He's not going to let this team get in over their heads. He's going to get them refocused quickly. And I wouldn't be surprised if they have a physical, intense practice tomorrow once they get back on the field.
Right, yeah. And I said once the matchup is all squared away, you know, Vikings and Eagles, we're probably watching two of the three best coached teams in 2017, at least, squaring off right now. And then obviously the other one to round out the three is going to be on the opposite side of the spectrum. Belichick and the Patriots are always up there. But you have no doubt, you know, despite all the storylines going in from Minnesota and all the storylines going in from Philadelphia, both these coaches will make sure their teams are mentally, physically prepared. They did, you know, they've got that blue collar nature because they're very focused in that sort of a way. I'm curious, do you, you know, Vikings are coming in with a great storyline. Philadelphia also coming in. They've got, you know, a little bit of a storyline behind them. Obviously, you've probably been aware of the dog masks that have been sold out worldwide. You know, Lane Johnson, Chris Long, and a few other Eagles took the fact that they were home underdogs very, very seriously. Took it very personally when they're facing Atlanta. They're going to be home underdogs again against Minnesota. You're obviously on the road, potentially the only road game you've got for this entire postseason, going to a very hostile Philly area. Right now, weather looks like it's going to be pretty decent, but things can get nasty outside. Obviously, Minnesota more of a dome team. How much does Philly worry you from that sort of a perspective, with the narrative, with the home field advantage, the team they've got going in? How much is that kind of on your radar? How much do you think it's on the Vikings' radar?
If you compare the Vikings at home to the Vikings on the road, yes, they're absolutely different. This is a team that defensively gave up 12.5 points at home this year. On the road, they were a lot more susceptible. At Pittsburgh, gave up 26. In London, they kind of flirted with the Browns into the fourth quarter, gave up 16 to them. They gave up 30 at Washington. They gave up 23 against Detroit, and again 31 against Carolina. So their road defense has not been nearly as strong. Obviously, the home field advantage they have at US Bank Stadium with the crowd is so invaluable on third downs. They don't have that advantage when they're on the road. Mike Zimmer talked about how important it's going to be just to get the right shoes so they're not slipping around. They've had some slippery fields this year, whether it's London or Lambeau or Chicago at Soldier Field. They've had some pretty tough environments, so they're going to make sure they're squared away equipment-wise. They're going to watch film on teams that have been slipping around those fields. They're going to talk about how to place their front foot. They're getting very technical about it. They're trying to make adjustments defensively because they have struggled at times on the road this year. Now, obviously, they had good moments, too. They shut out the Green Bay Packers at Lambeau in the penultimate game of the year. That was pretty special for them. They held Atlanta to 9 points on the road, but again, that was in dome, so a different turf. On grass, maybe this defense isn't quite as formidable. I do think if Philadelphia was coming to US Bank Stadium, I bet it would be Minnesota favored by 9 or 10 just because of quarterbacks. Anyone except Drew Brees, you know, really, coming into that stadium is going to have a tough time. And even Drew Brees struggled for one half of that game, and then he really exploded in the second half. But it's a tough place to play. If it weren't for the home field edge for Philly, I think Minnesota would be favored by a lot more. But obviously, going on the road, anything can happen. I don't think anybody feels too content, even though it is Nick Foles and not Carson Wentz. Everybody knows that Philadelphia's got a great defense, a great running game. They've got a healthy receiving crew. So it's going to be a great challenge. And I think Vikings fans were kind of going into the postseason assuming, well, we're going to play the whole postseason at home. Philadelphia's going to lose in the first round. And Sage Rosenfels and I both picked Philadelphia last week because we knew that they're too well coached. They're too good defensively. They're too good running the ball to lose and go one and done in this postseason.
Hey, you and Sage should talk to Mike because I've been clowning on him for a full week because twice now this season, only twice, Mike and I have disagreed on picks. Both time he picks the opponent, both time I pick Philadelphia. I am 2-0, Sam, so thank you very much. But anyway, I just like to remind my Locked On Eagles listeners of that at pretty much every turn I possibly can. Speaking of going on the road, I want to talk to you a little bit about Case Keenum. Obviously, absurd storylines with the Jeff Fisher backups meeting each other in the NFC Championship a season later. Just some silly, silly stuff. But you got the Case Keenum versus Nick Foles, the Jeff Fisher Revenge Bowl. And Keenum, definitely not as strong this season as he's been on the road. Pretty big difference in his statistics. Obviously, you kind of saw the full picture there that you got with Keenum against the Saints, where first half, really sharp, executing the offense pretty nicely, I thought. And then kind of third quarter, second half, Saints started trying to do a few different things. Keenum seemed to struggle a little bit. A bad interception to Marcus Williams, actually, in the third quarter. Are we just talking a high-variance player where you don't know what you're getting out of him week for week? Or are you talking about a guy who, if defenses figure him out, he can't really solve the problem? Keenum has been more successful than anybody anticipated. I guess my question is, why has that been the case? And what roadblock, if any, can Philadelphia put in his way that other teams have done to slow Keenum down?
I don't think Case Keenum was good enough to make a bad team good when he was in Houston, St. Louis slash LA. Mm-hmm. But I think he's good enough to keep a good team good. The Vikings are a good team. They're a well-coached team. They have a lot of talent, and he's good enough to sustain that. He's incredibly well-coordinated by Pat Shurmur, who has found a way to adapt around him. Shermer is not Norv Turner. You know, their old offensive coordinator, he was rigid. He was outdated. He wasn't really flexible. And Pat Shermer is the exact opposite. He's willing to adjust. He's willing to spread the ball around. They used to have Adrian Peterson demanding the ball so much, and they don't have that shackle this year, and they're spreading it out so well. And Case Keenum does a great job of that. He's also got some intangible qualities that are really important. He's, I think, really good in the huddle. He's got a commanding, confident presence. He's very mobile. He's got one of the lowest sack rates in the NFL. Maybe you saw the Saints game where he had that 10-yard scramble play in the red zone where he rolled out to the right, threw across his body, terribly dangerous pass, but it worked. And that's happened more often than not this year. Yeah, he's had some boneheaded interceptions against the Saints. Was a great example. And they got to stop calling that fade down the sideline because he's been picked more than once on that read because he doesn't have great arm strength. And when he throws the ball downfield, sometimes it can float. Looks more like a lob, and defensive backs get under it far too easily. But he has made a great number of plays where you drop your jaw and you say, how in the world did he make that happen? And that's just not something you can really coach. He's got that gunslinger mentality, and while he has made plenty of risky throws throughout the year, for whatever reason, he's been on the right side of a lot of those. A lot of them that could have been picked fell incomplete, leading to his 22-7 touchdown interception ratio. I thought the Saints game was probably par for the course for Keenum. It was a great first half, made some mistakes, came through when it mattered. That really was a microcosm of the season.
Yeah, I want to highlight one guy from our last question for you, Sam, because I know it's a question we're getting a lot. Whenever the offense seems to stall, because we've had two games where the offense hummed with Foles, we've had two games where the offense was ugly. And kind of the big question in those two games where things were ugly, and even for the period of time against Atlanta where things were a little shaky, the question was, where are the targets for Alshon Jeffrey? Where are the wide receiver one targets, right? We went up, we got this guy, we extended this guy, let's feed him the football. And we talked a lot in Locked On Eagles about how this offense works and whether or not it really has a true wide receiver one. But regardless, a lot of history. Alshon Jeffrey coming against Xavier Rhodes. Right now, Rhodes has been destructive. Your corner, long, physical, powerful. Dude looks like a wide receiver. He's unbelievable. He shattered a ton of dudes, put them all to sleep, except for Marvin Jones, who has his number for some reason. But we've only been watching Alshon Jeffrey for a year, right? He's only been in Midnight Green for this season. You've been covering the Vikings, so you've seen Alshon in a Bears uniform twice a season go up against your Minnesota corners, especially Xavier Rhodes. Over 9 games against the Vikings, Alshon's he's got 45 receptions, 685 yards, 7 touchdowns. Does he have Rhodes' number? Do they have a history? What can we expect Alshon against Rhodes? What's that matchup been like over the years?
Right. The career numbers for Alshon traces back to Josh Robinson. And if you look at the game logs, and I'm not right now, I'm not at my computer, but if I were to bring it up, I would expect that probably 2/3 of those touchdowns and yardage, if not more, came in 2013, 2014, against Josh Robinson. Now, Xavier Rhodes really didn't turn the corner. And I apologize if they're squeaking in the background because my puppy just found a toy. I'll try to go to a different room. Josh Robinson, bless his heart, he was a quick corner, pretty good at being in position, but he was like 5'9", and he could not compete against Alshon Jeffrey. So a lot of those numbers came against a lesser cornerback. Last 2 years or whatever it was of Jeffrey against the Vikings, much better success. Rhodes was really good against him, and Rhodes typically is better against bigger wide receivers for whatever reason, who maybe don't have as much mobility. Mm-hmm. He struggles more against some faster guys like a Marvin Jones or a Michael Thomas, who he let get a few in the Saints game. Against Jeffrey, he said it yesterday in the locker room. He knows exactly what he's going to get. He's been facing him virtually his whole career, and I think it's going to be a great matchup. I would be more intrigued, and like, cause you talked about, you don't know if you have a wide receiver one, but you've got 3 pretty darn good wide receivers. It's going to be fun to watch those secondary matchups with Waynes or with Mackenzie Alexander or Terrence Newman and see how your second and third wideouts fare. Because, obviously the Vikings have good cornerbacks behind Rhodes, but, they have had up and down moments. Trey Waynes is improving, like I mentioned, but, he's still a little bit susceptible. So let's see what happens with those. We'll see if Rhodes maybe shadows Jeffrey or not. He's not guaranteed to, certainly.
Right.
He doesn't always shadow. And that's something we won't know probably until the first quarter of that game, whether or not they've made that decision.
Sam, you could walk on and be a Locked On Eagles host, because I can't tell you how many times we say, listen, the interesting matchup is Aguilar in the slot versus X, or it's you know, it's Mac Hollins coming in versus Y. We love getting, you know, Trey Burton involved in this Philadelphia offense, man. It's very spread the wealth. You watch Corey Clement rack up 3 receiving touchdowns on you. You have no idea why. It's an undrafted kid out of Wisconsin, you know. And so it's always fun to see who Doug Peterson chooses to target. I know I said it was the last question, but because you brought it up, give me your X matchup to watch. Give me, on either side, one matchup that you're really interested to see that you think really has a defining characteristic for this game.
Maybe this is just because it's a family connection, but I'm interested to see how the Vikings will do with, like, Jerick McKinnon against a running back like Michael Kendricks, because there's the Eric Kendricks, Michael Kendricks connection. It'd be fun to see if the Vikings really put him to the test in the open field and see what he can do. And maybe that's not the most intriguing, but it's kind of the most newsworthy, or it's the coolest headline coming out of this game for a lot of people, with Eric Kendricks, who is not much of a talker in the locker room, but he always gets a big smile when someone asks about Michael Kendricks. But honestly, it is an intriguing matchup, because the Vikings do like to get McKinnon out there in the passing game. They weren't able to do it much against the Saints, which was unfortunate because I thought they were weak at linebacker. He's been really good, though, in the screen game. The interior, this line can get out there and really pave the way for him, too. So I think the Vikings are going to be avoiding that defensive line, trying to get outside on the edge to make some of those passes, rolling out Keenum, because that's a great line with Cox and Graham. So I could see a lot of short passing game. I could see the linebackers being forced to make a lot of tackles in this one for Philadelphia, and that's where Mr. Kendricks could come in.
Sam, last thing I'll ask you before you go, if you've got a score prediction for me yet, anything like that, you can drop it here. What do you think is going to go down?
I'm not prepared to give a final score, but I can, off the top of head, I would say, let's see, Vikings are favored by 4. I think it's going to be a tight game. I think the Eagles definitely cover in this game. I think it comes down to a field goal either way, and I think one of the sides will be forced to make a big defensive stop at the end, similar to how Philadelphia did against Atlanta. It feels like it's going to come down to something like that again. If the Vikings are going to make the Super Bowl, I know that they're not going to make it easy on their fans. It's going to be dramatic, and I'm sure that Philadelphia Eagles fans can relate as well. So I'm looking forward to a tightly contested game with dramatic, I'm guessing, probably defensive battles in the fourth quarter.
Oh, I love it. With the way these playoffs have played out so far, give me 60 minutes of really good football, and I'll be a happy camper at some point, regardless of who wins or loses. Hey, Sam Ekstrom on Twitter, at Sam Ekstrom, that's Ekstrom. Locked On Vikings, and then a Vikings beat reporter for ZoneCoverage.com. Sam, thank you so much for joining us, man. I wish you good luck on Sunday. All the best to you.
Yeah, thanks, Ben. It's been fun. Good luck to your squad.